Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is November 19th, 2014. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 17,685, the NASDAQ at 4,675, and the S&P at 2,048. Last week, we discussed renewable energy sources using solar and geothermal strategies in particular. If you want to know more about that, last week's show is available on podcasts through wdiy.org or yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight, we have a very special guest and a very relevant topic. AARP Bulletin financial expert Jane Bryant Quinn will be joining us to discuss how to make your money last and what things to consider. She's written numerous books and articles helping people manage their money well. Tonight, we will cover one of her articles titled Make Your Money Last. We are live tonight. If you have questions, you can call in. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll take your questions. Judy Ann's in the studio this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number again is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. I am so excited to have Jane Bryant Quinn with us this evening. I could take the whole show just reading her extensive biography, and I'm thrilled that she was willing to come on our local WDIY station, our listener community-supported station, so we thank her for being here. She is a nationally known personal finance expert and regular AARP Bulletin financial columnist. In her long career, she has established herself as America's most reliable voice for people trying to manage their money well. In her public policy writings, she addresses matters of top concern to everyone, including investor protection, health insurance, Social Security, and the sufficiency of retirement plans. She has written several books, including her best-selling book, Making the Most of Your Money Now. You can find more about her work as a financial columnist and guest for leading national news organizations and networks at her website, janebryantquinn.com, and that's J-A-N-E. BryantQuinn.com, or read her monthly column on AARP.org. Tonight, we're going to discuss how to make your money last. Jane Bryant Quinn, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lori. I'm very happy to be here with you tonight.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We like to bring as much education to our community in the Lehigh Valley, and we appreciate you with your notoriety coming here and talking to our listeners as well, with all the great information that you have.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, I want to start with a question for you, which will maybe help also set the stage for how you became passionate about what you're doing. You may not be able to answer right off the bat, but you've done so much talking about financial fitness for the consumer over your career. You've had books, columns, TV shows. You've been guests on various shows. You've done the column for AARP Bulletin. You have blogs. So you've done a lot of work across a broad spectrum of media outlets. I'm wondering, number one, if you can tell us what your favorite might be, and then number two, what has driven you to share this passion with us?
Well, if we're talking about the various media platforms, Laurie, you're right, it would be very hard for me to choose because everything is so different. I grew up in print, of course, writing the column for Newsweek magazine and the Washington Post writers group, and I just loved doing that. But then when I started working also for CBS TV, the morning and evening news, it's a whole new way of getting information out to people, to do it verbally and for people who are listening instead of reading. And so I learned a whole different way of writing and communicating, and I just thought they were both wonderful. And of course, blogs are great. You know, you can say anything you want. I think probably, though, I'll kind of turn that a little bit when, in terms of what made me the happiest, you know, every time I get an email now, used to be letters in the old days, every mm-hmm. time I get an email from someone who says, thank you, you helped me do X, that is my favorite thing of the day.
Yes, yes.
So in terms of what drives me, it just drives me crazy to see all the bad stuff out there that people are getting poor information. And so I just love finding out things that I think will help people, and I love it when people tell me I help them.
It is very rewarding. I had someone call on the show even quite recently, and they said, 4 years ago when I called in, you suggested this, and we followed your advice. Thank you so much. And I don't recall what it was regarding, but it was very rewarding to know it made a difference. I tell folks I always wanted to be a teacher. And so it's wonderful to have these platforms, as you have as well, to help educate and make a difference for people. Because sometimes if they get the wrong information, it's hard to unwind.
Very, very difficult to unwind. And if you've lost some money in the process, very difficult to make it up.
Yeah. Well, in fact, that's some of what we're going to talk about, in losing money or having enough money in retirement, how we make that last. So I want to let's set the stage. We're going to have a few breaks. We're going to take a break in a few minutes. So I want to give the phone number. If people have questions, they can call in, and that's 610-758-8810. But let's set the stage for what we're talking about tonight. So when we think about retirement, we think about all the wonderful things we're going to do, relaxing, traveling, spending time with our family and friends. But the reality of it is when we're retired and we don't have that paycheck coming in anymore, there has to be some plan for paying our bills. So let's set the stage for, at kind of a minimum, what are we looking at? How are we paying our bills? What do we need to think about?
Well, to start with, Laura, you know, there's no magic wand. If you have just retired, whether you did it voluntarily or, unfortunately, involuntarily, you know, what you've got is what you've got. You can't think that maybe something is going to be magic out of the air somewhere. And so you need to say, okay, this is what I have. Life expectancy is, you know, on average mid-80s these days, with more than roughly half people living longer than that. Mm-hmm. And so how am I going to parcel this out over time? And that, you know, feeds back into what are my expenses, and can I turn whatever savings I have, my pension, a Social Security, maybe I need part-time work, whatever, how do I turn that into what I call a homemade paycheck, which is something that can come in every month, partly from your savings, partly from your Social Security or other sources, that is going to last me. It's an uncertain life. I don't know how many years I'm going to live, but I have to make some kind of a plan for it. And so you need to think in terms of that homemade paycheck. Where does the money come from, and how long is it going to last?
I love that phrase. I have not heard that before. And I don't know if you've used that in your column, but homemade paycheck, that is a That's a good phrase to have. And I do want to mention that you do a column for AARP Bulletin. Most people probably know that, and or maybe more of the people who are members of ARP. So lots of different topics that you cover there as well. I know the most recent one was divorce will cost you, and so there's issues with that too. So I wanted to point out the AARP Bulletin is where you write and share some of your stories. You also do that on your website as well. So we talked about the homemade paycheck, looking at your resources. They may be fixed now, and don't expect a magic bean. So looking at fixed resources when we talk about a pension and or a Social Security. First of all, pensions, we're not even seeing them that often anymore.
Mainly government. You know, they're still, when you look at state or, you know, the local or teachers or federal, certainly there are still pensions there by and large. But in private, you're quite right. Pensions are going down the drain.
And so when we talk about over time and in our retirement, if our pensions are fixed, and some pensions have a cost of living adjustment, some don't. So when we're talking about Social Security, even that a little bit more fixed, but there's a cost of living adjustment on Social Security as well. We've seen, I think the latest increase was like 1.7. I think last year, I know one year recently, there wasn't an increase at all. So our resources, if we're counting on Social Security, maybe a pension, those are a little bit fixed. Our expenses may go up. They're subject to inflation in retirement. Quite often we have more health expenses, medical expenses, and those are going up sometimes higher than inflation. So we need to tap our savings. You said sometimes it is what it is. If you're retired voluntary or involuntary, here's your bucket of savings, and sometimes we're going to have to tap those. So to that point, having some savings, should we put in a plug for pre-retirees and what they need to do now while they've got time?
Well, certainly pre-retirees need to look around and see what's happening with people who you know, suddenly lose their jobs, unexpectedly lose their jobs, and say, gosh, what am I going to do now? So anyone who is lucky enough to have a retirement plan at work, a 401k, a 403b, you know, whatever type of plan it is, where you can take money out of your paycheck and have it go automatically into a retirement plan, man, you should be using that. Power saving is the word that I think of in these years just before retirement. And, you know, so many people tell me, you know, I'm living paycheck to paycheck. I couldn't possibly save any more money. And that's true for some people. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, Laurie, it actually isn't true. Mm-hmm. And because if you say, okay, I'm saving 3% or 5% of my pay or whatever, I can't possibly save any more. But if you know, go to your company and say, okay, I want to save 7%, I want to save 8%, and they start taking out of your paycheck, mm-hmm. you know what will happen? Nothing will happen. You will find that somehow you are still living paycheck to paycheck, mm-hmm. but you are putting money aside. This is the only magic that exists in personal finance. There are no secrets in personal finance. There's only one magic, and the magic is that if you don't see it, if it's out of your paycheck, you won't spend it. And especially in these years just before retirement, you should try pushing that. Even if you think you can't afford it, you should try pushing that, saying, okay, 8% for the next 6 months, let's see what happens. And I think you'll find out it works, and then you can go up to 9 or 10%. You can keep on pushing it. And I just think that's the main thing that you need to do pre-retirement. Just put away as much as you possibly can. Another thing, and this is something some people do, which I really admire and think is a good idea, and that is, you know, the 2-3 years before you think you're going to retire, start thinking about trying to live on what your income is going to be mm-hmm. in retirement. Mm-hmm. So that, because almost everybody cuts down. I mean, it's just a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may think your friends aren't doing it, but they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's just one of the things you do when you retire is you tend to cut down on your budget.
I think
and the
that's
sooner
a good
you
idea.
Can start practicing that, I think the better off you are.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we have in the studio this evening Jane Bryant Quinn, a finance expert at AARP Bulletin. She's a financial columnist there, and we appreciate her being here. We're talking about how to make your money last in retirement. And we've spent the first part of the show kind of setting the stage for getting ready for that. We've talked about having fixed income sources, resources in our retirement, possibly some savings, some strategies to build up savings. Jane has mentioned developing a homemade check in your retirement by tapping those resources that you have, coming up with a way to pay yourself kind of regularly, but also in order to have something to pay out, we want to look at some power saving that she suggested, pushing your savings through your employer plans, your 401ks, your 403bs, thinking that you don't have any money, not another nickel to scrape together. Push yourself a little, and there's a way to find that. Jane, you had mentioned too, which I think is a great idea, 2 or 3 years before you retire to maybe live like you are in retirement. That's great. And interestingly, I think too that so often people think they don't have any more money, but they haven't sat down and looked at what they've been spending their money on, realizing that, you know, cable is not a need. It's a want, and it's a huge expense for people every month. Our phones are huge expenses, you know, driving around, you know, running errands and not thinking about what we're doing, even little ways to save that way. It's amazing how much people think they can't cut when they really could if they took
But you know, time. Laura, this is one of the reasons why I like so much the idea of pushing your savings. And with your 401k, putting away more money even if you think you can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a 401k, you know, you can get an individual retirement account. Banks have them, mutual funds have them. So, and you can make an automatic payment from your bank account into an individual retirement account so you can stay there, save there. I've found so often that if you say to people, well, you know, you could cut your cable, you can reduce your phone bill, and you get this list, and it becomes complicated, and then you say, well, maybe it's not all that much money, I'm not going to think about it. But if you put that money away so it's out of your checking account,
mm-hmm.
and so you have less money in your checking account than you had before because you've put it automatically into savings,
mm-hmm.
then whether it's cutting your cable or cutting your travel or not shopping this month or whatever it is, you're going to find your own way to do that,
mm-hmm.
because you're now looking at what you have in your checking account. And you say, well, that's what I can afford to live on.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, you are automatically saving money, and you don't have to sort of, I mean, this is crazy. I'm the money lady, right? I hate budgeting. You know, I hate sitting down and here's this list. And some people are wonderful at it, and I was never any good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was good at was saying, okay, I'm going to put even more of my money aside. Back when I was living paycheck to paycheck, because I certainly was at the start for many years, I'm going to put more money aside than I think I can afford, and then, you know, how you manage your living expenses, what you decide to do and not do, then starts happening automatically. You make the judgment for yourself without someone saying, well, you know, cable is too expensive, but I love cable. I want to do something. I want to cut somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to simplify it, though. I mean, it's a great perspective. So that's, I'm so happy that you brought that up and mentioned that. And listeners, it's certainly applicable to people who don't like to budget. If you just push the savings, and this is going to be the new term, push the savings, push the savings.
Push the savings. And you know, it's better for people because everyone has a different sense of what they want versus what they need.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having sort of a list of, well, guess what, folks, these are just wants. If you're a shut in, you don't get around much, or you know you've moved, you don't have many friends yet, cable could be a real need for you.
Right.
And so, but then you make your own decision of what to cut, and in the meantime, you're just saving more money.
Mm-hmm. The other item that people have to appreciate is after a while, with all of this savings and it builds up and it starts to compound, it's so empowering. And it's the compounding that then starts to work for you as well. And it kind of just helps everything. I mean, if people could understand, if you have, you know, 100,000 that turns into 200,000 that turns into 300, you know, it just starts to compound, and your money that you saved is earning money, and then that money is earning money. And it's like it's helping you out as you go along. Jane, we have a question that came in from Richard in Phillipsburg. Hi.
Alrighty.
Can you ask your question, please?
Yes. My question is, how do you get younger people, I would say people in their 20s and 30s who are just starting their career, to really realize that they have to start contributing as soon as possible? It's to their own advantage, especially considering that there are no defined benefits plans. Most people are non-union workers, so you don't have anybody negotiating for you. So, I just find that there's a resistance to actually sitting down and doing the paperwork for a lot of the young people. They think they put it off. And I was just wondering if you know any motivational techniques.
First, there is, with if they are lucky, and I always say if you're lucky enough to work for a company that has a 401k or a similar plan, one thing they started doing just a few years ago was automatic enrollment, so that no matter who you were when you went to work for the company, and you could be 21 or you could be 51, no matter who you were, they are automatically putting you into the 401k. Now, you can opt out. You can say, oh, I don't want to do that. But what they've found is that when you are automatically put into a plan, and they put you in at some low level, usually like 3%, so that's not a lot, but it's a start, they put you in automatically, and then you don't – most people then stay because they don't – inertia, the inertia you're talking about, where people don't want to bother signing up, especially young people, they've got lots of things on their minds. But if the company does it for them automatically, then they stay in. And there have been various proposals over time to have automatic IRAs, automatic 401ks, even in smaller companies, to make more and more people able to do this. And I am a huge fan of something that would be automatic savings for anyone and everyone. I think it would be a sort of a great gift to them, and so I would love to see that. Otherwise, with young people, you just need to talk to them and try to explain the need. Sooner or later, they figure it out, and some people do figure it out young. I mean, I have some young people in my family. I must say that I'm very impressed to see, you know, grandchildren and whatnot, to see how they are thinking seriously about saving money. So it's not everybody.
And Richard, sometimes there's some income tax incentives as well. There's something called the Retirement Savers Credit, depending on how much income these young folks are earning. And, you know, they can't be a student. There's certain restrictions. That's another show. But there are sometimes tax incentives. So if you say to them, hey, when you're filing your tax return, you might want to think about if you put money into a retirement account, is that going to save you money? And all of a sudden, their eyes open because they think, wow, I can get a little bit more money back while keeping money. So that's the incentive, to keep money in an account for themselves, even though it's a retirement account. There may be certain tax credits like a retirement savers credit. Okay?
Thank you, Richard, for calling in.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Yes, I like the idea of automatic enrollment as well. We are going to talk about then, Jane, as we go through the show, your article, Make Your Money Last. And I don't recall what issue. Was that in the September issue? Wasn't that a recent issue?
It was in a recent issue. And, you know, to tell you the truth, Laurie, I'm not sure. The AARP bulletin has very long deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 weeks ago, I finished the January column, and I'm working on the February one.
Okay. I think it was the September one. And the beauty of the Internet is people can Google your name, Jane Bryant Quinn, and AARP, and the subject matter, and find whatever article you might have written, whatever topic. So this was Make Your Money Last. And one of the things you talked about in there was the 4% rule. And some of our listeners may be familiar with that if they, you know, try to do their own homework and do their own planning. They will come and say, hey, what's with this 4% rule? So I was recently at a conference, and I think you had actually referenced this gentleman's name, Michael Kitchis. He's talked about this rule as well and the history of it. And I thought that was really interesting. The history of it was developed by a financial planner named Bill Bangen about two decades ago. And he went through the reason they came up with this 4% rule. And they talked about having a balanced portfolio and over time with volatility. You know, there's going to be times where the market's up and times when the market's down. But it was talking about a properly diversified, allocated portfolio of stocks and bonds and different things like that. But can we talk a little bit about the concept of the 4% rule?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was a very creative thing that Bill Bangen did in coming up with this. And this also is part of how you make a homemade paycheck. The idea is that whatever savings you have, and it could be a lot, it could be a little, whatever you have, if you say, I'm retiring, I want this to last for 30 years, how do I do this? And I am going to have some balanced investments, which we can talk about in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
How much can I take per year with a reasonable surety that this will last me for at least 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer Bill came up with at a whole lot of studies was you take 4% of your savings in the first year, and each year afterwards you take the same amount of money plus an increment for inflation. So if inflation, you know, is 2%, you would add 2% to the amount that you took the year before, and if it's 2% in the next year, you would sort of add another 2% so that you keep this gross amount that you take up, you keep it up with inflation every year. And he found that you would, with a reasonable balance between stocks and bonds in your portfolio, stock and bond mutual funds in your portfolio, and in your investments, this is going to last you, or you have a very, very reasonable chance of this lasting you 30 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really important about what he did, because he took it back to 1926, which is basically where you get the good data from,
mm-hmm.
and did it in overlapping periods. So, what about the 30 years after 1926 and then the 30 years after 1927 and going on like that? And he found that the 4% rule even through the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
It worked even through the stagflation, which started in 1973, which was a very difficult time for retired people because inflation ran so high, mm-hmm. and the market didn't do so great. And it worked. In other words, this 4% in the first year plus an inflation increment worked during the worst economic times that he looked at, starting from 1926 over 30-year periods. So if it worked in the worst economic times for 30 years, it obviously is going to do even better in just mediocre times and much better in really good times.
Okay, Jane, so, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to continue to talk about the 4% rule and how to make your money last in retirement. We'll be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me this evening Jane Bryant Quinn, nationally known personal finance expert and regular AARP Bulletin financial columnist. We're talking in particular tonight about an article she wrote, I believe, in the September issue called How to Making the Most of Your... Nope, sorry, that's your book, Making the Most of Your Money. About making your money last, and we are talking about the 4% rule. So we just went through that. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can call live on air or off air and give your question to Judy Ann, and she'll bring it into the studio to us, and we'll do our best to answer the question. So we were just talking about the 4% rule, and I think it's important to note, Jane, that you had mentioned when we talk about the 4% rule, typically people think in their minds 4%, 4%, 4%, but you had mentioned that Bangen's research had said that you could actually adjust that 4% each year for inflation as well. So over time, that would go up.
It's important. A couple of things, Laurie. First, mm-hmm. it's important to say people start thinking, well, it's 4% of whatever I have in my account each year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong, because if you did that, you would have less money if you hit a bad market for a year or so, and you just took 4%, then your income would go down.
Mm-hmm.
And you would, if you hit a really good market, you would take a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But then that might not balance out the next time you hit a bad market.
Mm-hmm.
So the key is, first, the 4% is just a first year thing. You take 4% your first year, and after that you forget percentages. After that, you take that same dollar amount plus an increase for inflation every year.
Okay.
And the other thing is, I was saying that this system worked through the Depression. It worked through that terrible stagflation we had starting in 1973 for 12 years or so. And so the question is, because what about people who retired in the year 2000, the top of the tech bust?
Mm-hmm.
And since then, we had a terrible bear market then, and then the market recovered, and then we had another terrible bear market when the financial system turned upside down in 07, 08. And so where are we now? We don't have a 30-year period, because Bill did his studies over 30-year periods. We don't have a 30-year period, but he has looked at how people are doing who retired in the year 2000 in January, right on the edge of the first, the tech bubble collapsed, and the 4% rule is working for them.
Mm-hmm.
So far, now that's, 15 years, halfway through, it is working for them. And it was also working for them even before this huge market increase that we had since 2009, which is also very an interesting fact. Mm-hmm. But it's really important to remember that 4% is year one, and after that it's that same dollar amount plus an increase for inflation, which keeps your purchasing power even.
That is a great distinction as well. So first year only, that sets the dollar amount, and then from there the increase, the inflation adjustment, is on that dollar amount from the first year.
And, you know, Laura, very often, you know, if we don't go through a, if we don't have one of the worst periods ever, as the Depression or the stagflation, then maybe halfway through your retirement you're going to be doing better than expected. And then a lot of people say, well, at this point I'm going to reset the clock. I'm mm-hmm. going to look at it again. We have not had a 10-year depression. We have not had a 10-year stagflation. So because we've had even just a mediocre mm-hmm. 15 years, then you say, well, I'm going to take another look at this, and I'm going to see if maybe I can spend some more money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you spend more than that 4% at the start,
mm-hmm.
Then you have to do it with a plan saying, okay, I'm just retired. I'm going to spend a little more money. I want to take a cruise to the Caribbean. But after that, then you're going to have to cut back at some point going forward just to balance off your earlier higher spending. And when we talk about making the homemade paycheck, what you say is, okay, here's my Social Security, here is my pension, if any,
mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm getting from part-time work, if any,
mm-hmm.
here is the 4%, and you add all that up, and that is your income. And you have to fit your spending to that income. That is your homemade paycheck.
Mm-hmm. And people can actually set that up to occur as well. They can. We talk about something called the funnel method, where we say, okay, your Social Security check goes into this bank account, the pension goes into this bank account, here's your part-time money, and then here's your paycheck. And that amount might go out into a checking account. So we might have, you know, the resources coming into a, you know, a money market or something like that. And then they actually get a paycheck and then can budget basically using that without having to do that dreaded actual budget.
right. Well, you know, that's how you make your own homemade paycheck, with, you know, Social Security, which comes in every month.
Right.
And if you're doing the 4% rule, you know, you take, say, the dollar amount that you're going to have for the year, say, take it in January, and you can put it in a savings account, and then you can take out, you know, 1/12 of it every month, and then the next year you have your dollar amount out of savings again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the 4% also could be coming from retirement accounts. Can we talk for a minute the effect of income taxes on possibly some of these withdrawals we're making of 4%?
Right. Well, what Bill Bengen did, and the others, because the 4% rule is the basic,
mm-hmm.
and with a little diversification, like having some smaller company stock, mutual funds, I'm always a mutual fund person, as I'm sure you know,
mm-hmm.
Then you could do 4.5% in the first year plus inflation subsequently. And if you have enough money to be flexible, so you say, well, I want to take more, but if the market does badly, I can afford to cut back,
mm-hmm.
you can actually go up to 5.5% in the first year, plus the dollar amount, plus increases for inflation. Because you say, I have the flexibility to cut back if we have a couple of bad years in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variety of ways you can approach this. The 4% was kind of the basic that Bengen started with, and then other researchers like Michael Kitchis, who you just mentioned, mm-hmm. and others, have started looking at a little flexibility around that number.
Okay, let's talk for a minute, and then I want to go back to that number, but let's first talk a minute about a properly invested portfolio. I want to give the phone number one more time, 610-758-8810. Folks can call in live or off air if you're not comfortable talking live, 610-758-8810. And, you know, in this show, we can't make investment recommendations, but we can talk about what a properly invested portfolio might look like under this research. Because when we talk about a 4% withdrawal rate, we're not talking about someone having their all their savings in a bank account earning nothing. So let's talk for a minute about a properly invested portfolio as to what some of this research was based on. Can you talk to that
Yes,
point?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We're talking about a mix of, as I said, I'm a mutual fund person. I don't think people do a very good job picking stocks. I don't mm-hmm. think professionals do a very good job of picking stocks. So mm-hmm. I have always recommended that individuals do it via mutual funds, which I do myself, mm-hmm. by the way. And if you are afraid of the stock market and you keep everything in bond mutual funds or bank accounts or you know, CDs, whatever, you cannot do 4%. The research shows that if you stick entirely to fixed income investments, you should take no more than 2.5% in year one, plus the then inflation adjustments in each subsequent year. So you are, if you say that you don't want to do any growth, you are limiting your income.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to know that. When you talk about the split between stock funds and bond funds, there's a range where it were. You don't have to have just a fixed amount.
Mm-hmm.
They usually do the research on 50% stocks, 50% bonds, but you can have a range of, say, 35% stocks with the rest in bond funds, or you can go up to 60, 65% in stocks and the rest on bond funds, and surprise, surprise, it still works.
Mm.
So all the research is done on a 50-50 basis, but there is flexibility above and below that. But one more thing that's important to say is that all of the research has been done, obviously, not on individual mutual funds because everything's different. All of the research has been done on indexes. So for stocks, the proxy was the Standard & Poor's 500 index.
Mm-hmm.
And for bonds, the proxy was 10-year intermediate-term treasuries.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the two things. And if you want to have reasonable security that your investments are going to do what the research says they should do, then without making any specific recommendations, the mm-hmm. answer is the index mutual fund, which follows the index.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the research was done on the index. And a low-cost index mutual fund follows the index, and that is your best guarantee that you are going to have the same kind of results. If you go and you know, try to swing for the fences with various kinds of wild and woolly and strange funds, the research may or may not work for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you know it'll work for you if you follow the indexes.
Mm-hmm. Because the studies have shown through all of that, with a properly diversified portfolio, you can still do around 4% in the first year with that inflation rider thereafter.
And I want to say something else about, and this is to people who have been afraid of stocks and, you know, the people who sold in 08 and then since watched the market more than doubled and said, oh, my goodness, why yeah. didn't I stick around?
Yeah, now I need to get in after
yeah,
it's doubled.
Yeah, right. First, I understand gut fear when the market is going down, especially when you're retired or near retired. But here's the way to think about it again when you own some stock funds and some bond funds. You say, when you're younger, you always say stocks for growth, right? If you're not going to touch it for 20 years, you should be in stocks. Well, that is no different when you're 50 as when you're 20.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you say, okay, I'm going to be diversified, let's just say 50-50 stocks and bonds, just because, you know, easy to think in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You say, for my first 10 years of retirement, I'm going to say, okay, I've got bond mutual funds, and treasuries tend to go up when stocks go down, which is why you like treasuries, mm-hmm. treasury funds. And you say, okay, I'm going to think about my investments, that the half that I have in stocks, that's for the long term. I'm not going to touch it for 10, 12, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
For the first 10, 12, 15 years, I'm going to rely on what I've put into fixed income mutual funds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, meanwhile, the growth, which at 15 years plus, the market is going to grow,
mm-hmm.
and that is what is going to fund the second half of my retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about dividing it that way, you say the first half of my retirement, okay, I'm scared of stocks, but I'm going to fund this with some cash in the bank, a cash reserve, plus bond-owning funds.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say for the second half of my retirement, however, money I'm not going to touch for 10, 12, 15 years, that should be in stocks now, just the way it should have been in stocks when you were 25.
Jane, I think you're a very organized person. I can tell by the way you simplify things. So this has been very interesting how you put this perspective on actually making it kind of simple for people to employ. Now, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Jane Bryant Quinn, and we're going to talk a little bit about having a spending plan in retirement. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit wdiy.org.
And in addition to accepting vinyl donations, we are now also accepting compact discs. 27 degrees, fair skies in Lehigh Valley tonight, mostly cloudy with a steady temperature around 27 degrees. That's a change from this afternoon. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 38. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 20, and Friday, sunny with a high near 36. This is WDIY Allentown, Your Financial Choices, and we rejoin Lori Siebert and her guest.
Thank you, Neil. Welcome back to the show, folks. We have Jane Bryant Quinn with us in the studio. She is a nationally known personal finance expert and regular AARP Bulletin financial columnist. If you have questions, we still have time. The number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. And Jane, it's hard for me to sit here as a host trying to plug into what we're doing when I just want to sit and listen to you and take notes, because you really do make it quite simple in a very understandable way. And I think that is engaging for people and more likely to have success with folks when we can simplify, make it easier to embrace some of these strategies. I just want to quickly throw them out because I've been trying to write some of these down. The homemade paycheck, great idea in retirement to get yourself set up with a homemade paycheck. Know what your resources are, know what your fixed resources are, and what savings you can tap and make that your paycheck, your monthly paycheck. We talked about power saving or pushing the savings, particularly for people who are pre-retirement when they still have a chance to save. And from our caller, Richard, who asked about how do we motivate 20 and 30-year-olds, and you talked about automatic enrollment, but also just to get in that habit of push savings and the excitement that can be had by seeing funds accumulate and kind of ignoring them, where then they can start working for you as well, not just your savings, but the earnings on those savings. It continues to compound. And then your latest comment, too, about when we're looking at a properly invested portfolio, if people could kind of mentally separate how they're thinking about their investments and be a little bit more objective with it and say, okay, stocks for the long term. That means we don't have to sit and worry every single day what's happening to them. That's our bucket for the second half of our retirement. The fixed income is the bucket for our near-term retirement. And also having that properly invested portfolio so that they can use some of these rules that have been tested and researched. And we're talking about the 4% rule, having a properly invested portfolio. And for folks who are not as risk tolerant to have a properly invested portfolio, if they tend to be more on the fixed income side, it might mean that 4% rule might not apply to them. They have to do something a little bit smaller, 2.5%. And when we talk about that 4% rule, it really means just in the first year to set the threshold for that dollar amount that we're going to tap from our portfolio, from our savings. So lots of information. I'm trying to gather it all so our listeners who tune in and they also listen to us on podcasts can kind of get their arms around all of this. But I also want, if we have time, Jane, and you're willing, can we talk a little bit about talking about a spending plan? Because I know that you have your book, Making the Most of Your Money Now. And, you know, I've read the reviews on it. I've heard wonderful things. It's just so, you know, it's just as you've been talking this evening. It's what people can understand, grasp, and implement. So if we could talk a little bit about the premise of that book and then talk a little bit about, you know, a spending plan in retirement, I would appreciate it if you have time.
Sure. By the way, Laura, one thing I do think, and I thank you for saying that I've made it simple, but, you know, I think that sound money management is simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that why people get confused, first, a lot of people think, well, I have to know math. And the truth is, you don't. It's just common sense. And I am terrible at math, which nobody ever believes, but is true. Because when you're talking about building a spending plan or managing your finances, we've just talked about a series of things that are actually very simple that people can do themselves. But you get confused because there's all these people out there throwing all this complicated stuff at you,
mm-hmm.
and you think, oh, I should do this, and oh, I should do that, and they're the experts, and they really know. But, you know, the people who run mutual funds, the majority of them don't beat the indexes.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who invest with the index do better than most of these big hotshot professional money managers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to believe because, you know, they are the guys who are supposed to be the experts.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to get over that in your head, that actually these principles are pretty simple and you can follow them yourself. Or if you have help with an advisor, it still is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have your advisor stick with that.
Mm-hmm.
Making the Most of Your Money Now, I first wrote, it is a comprehensive financial guide. It's about budgeting and debt and saving and investing and retiring and health insurance and Social Security and all that stuff. And I published it first in 1991, where I'm happy to say the Consumers Union named it the best personal finance book on the market, if you don't mind my doing a little toot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have continually updated that book over the years, and it is, I'm happy to say, still selling very well.
Mm-hmm.
And the most recent edition, I called it Making the Most of Your Money Now.
Mm-hmm.
I resisted the temptation to say making the most of what's left of your money because it came out right after 2009. You know, so I was writing it right on the cusp of what was happening in this country then. Mm-hmm. But and so that's what it's about. It is the comprehensive financial guide for younger people that, you know, Richard was calling about, and for older people, and for everybody in the middle who have these kinds of questions. And in terms of making a spending plan, I'd like to add something to this 4% rule on homemade mm-hmm. paycheck business. And that is that the way to deal best when there are, if you have part of your money in stocks, as you should have for the long term, for the second half of your retirement, mm-hmm. The way to deal with your gut feelings when the market goes down is to have a cash reserve. Mm-hmm. So if you have a cash reserve of money that will fill the gap between your Social Security or pension or part-time work or whatever and your current budget, just fills that gap, and it fills the gap for 2 years, then you can say, okay, the market is down. I'm going to shut my eyes. I'm going to ignore it. Because if I sell now, I have taken that loss. The loss will be there with me forever. Mm-hmm. I'll never get back in time. So I'm going to turn to my cash reserve to pay my bills for the next 2 years. And then the odds are there will be at least a partial recovery in the market. And then if I go back to taking money out of savings, I'm going to be okay. So part of this strategy is to have a cash reserve that'll get you through a couple of years. And then it doesn't matter so much because markets always come back. Mm-hmm. When they're going down, people don't believe it. Mm-hmm. And then they look back and say, hey, the market came back. That's the darndest thing. And it always does.
I say that all the time when someone will say, hey, did you see the market was down today? And I say, yeah, you know what? I heard that happens from time to time. And then I say, oh, the market's up. I know. I heard that happens too. So,
you know, people should, you know, do your, you know, X percent in, you know, stock index fund, X percent in a bond index fund, and something in cash reserve. And then, Laurie, forget about it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, get on with the more important things in life. You know, go mm-hmm. see your grandchildren. You know, go to the movies. Do something, you know, read a book. Do whatever you're doing and not look at the market all the time. Because if you look at these fundamental rules and if you look at history, and you have made yourself a homemade paycheck that is within your limit, within your Social Security, your 4%, your pension if you're lucky enough to have one, and you're living within that limit, you're okay.
Right.
And you don't have to watch the market every day.
And in fact, I think with that emergency reserve, that gives people probably, with the 2 year to cover the gap, which people have to remember, the emergency reserve is to cover the gap.
Yep.
And if you do it for 2 year period, they'll find that just that feeling of security probably will take the emotions out of reacting to the market.
That so, is yeah. what I hope.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and this sort of goes back. I keep thinking of a Richard who called in saying, you know, how do you incentivize young people? How do you incentivize people in midlife and later in life to stay with the percentage they have in stocks when the market goes down?
Yeah.
And to try to say, you know, this is going to be okay. And if you sell when the market is down, you have booked a loss you will never make up.
Right. Jane, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on. I want to direct people to your website, Jane Bryant Quinn. That's JaneBryantQuinn.com. You have lots of information there for folks to tap as well, and they can always read the AARP bulletin and look for your column there as well.
Well, thank you, Laurie. It's been really fun talking to you.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks. I want to thank the listeners. Thank Neil for being here. Thank Judy Ann. Next week, we'll have a pre-recorded show for the Thanksgiving holiday. I'll be back live on December 3rd with Chris Martin, president and CEO of Provident Bank, who recently bought Team Capital in the area. We're going to discuss the changes in the local bank scene and banking services. Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive and not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, Jane Bryant Quinn. Have a great week.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thanks for listening to Your Financial Choices. This is WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. We're at 88.1 FM in Allentown, Bethlehem, and on translators 93.9 in Easton, Phillipsburg, and 93.7 Fogelsville and Trexlertown. And of course, we're on the web at WDIY.org. Stay tuned. Up next, NPR headlines, and that's followed by Tom Druckenmiller and In the Tradition.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. President Obama is indicating he will take executive action on immigration tomorrow, in essence sidestepping Congress to shield millions of individuals in the U.S. illegally from being deported. In a video released today by the White House, the president says the immigration issue has been ignored for far too long.